From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night. Welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello to everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and well, alongside of me, as always, is my ever-wonderful, ever-vampiric, ever-cape-wearing, ever-double-collared wearing producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count.
Oh, hey. Oh, hi. Oh, hello there, Bob.
Great hey, Count, to be before with we begin, you here. Before we begin, you're recording, right?
Yes, we are
okay,
recording.
Okay, let's...
We can always start the show over again if that was the case.
But you're recording.
Yeah, we are recording.
Okay, good, good. We're keeping that in. Editor's note, keeping that in for laughs.
Keep that
My
in.
Ever-wonderful double-collar-wearing producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey there, Bob. How's it going?
Oh, man. I've had better.
You've had better.
But before anything, I just have to introduce somebody. Somebody that's been around the block a couple times at the Bob After Dark universe, and somebody that used to sit right here next to me when the world was normal. Somebody I consider my brother, one of my best friends, my magical cohort, my teacher, if you will, the Australian occultist, making his triumphant return to the Bob After Dark world, Anthony DeFabio.
Oi!
I got nervous there for a second.
Oi!
Oh,
there we go.
Anthony.
How's it going?
Anthony, welcome back.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be back.
Okay, we're going to get to the Count's weekend update, but how have you been? Where have you been? What's going on in your life? How's, you know, the pandemic's been affecting everybody? The world's been nuts. Where have you been?
I've been on walkabout.
A walkabout, huh? How big of a walkabout? That's a long walkabout, mate.
I went around the world in 80 days.
Okay.
And decided to come back. But I found myself sitting in front of this screen with my best friend, my best pal, my best buddy in the whole world, Bob Anderson.
Welcome back, Anthony.
Everything's good. You know, unfortunately, with COVID, things have been a little hectic and crazy for all of us. And I do pray every day that this pandemic ceases to exist. But thanks for having me.
It's good to have you back, man. Now it's time for the fans' probably favorite moment of the show, Panic's Weekend Update.
That's their favorite part of the show?
A lot of people get angry if I don't ask you how your weekend update's been.
The weekend was all right, but really the main thing to plug here, Bob, over the weekend, a video was released.
A video was released.
A new episode of Panic in the Region, which is called Panic in the Region, right?
Wait, you're the same guy?
Oh, wait, no. I watched a video with a guy that looks like me called Panic in the Region. But, you know, it involved, once again, Bob Anderson from Bob After Dark here. Of course, we sit here every week in the Strachan Van Til studios here at WJOB. And down the block from us, people may not know there's an old studio that was in use for decades, built in the early 1950s. And from time to time, people were saying, well, there's something going on over there, something unearthly, something supernatural, something paranormal. So I figure you as well, Bob, wanted to check it out. I know a lot of people did want to check it out there. So we got Pete Rice from Northwest Indiana Paranormal.
Yep.
And his group over there, a few members came on down to investigate the old WJOB studios. And, you know, a lot of times you watch these paranormal shows, Bob, and not a whole lot happens, right, Anthony? You probably watch a lot of these shows as well.
Anthony doesn't have TV.
Oh.
We don't have TV in Australia.
You guys just look at the sand, right?
We throw sand in the air and it pretty much entertains us.
That's entertaining. But we went there and We got a little more action than I thought we were going to get. I always thought something was there, but what we captured on film was way more than I anticipated, Bob.
That was probably one of the liveliest unexpected investigations I've ever been on. If you guys haven't watched the episode yet of the Panic in the Region episode of the investigation in the old WJOB studio, I got to be a guest for that investigation with the Northwest Indiana Paranormal Group. And man, we had, I don't want to spoil it. As much as I want to spoil it, I want you guys to all go watch the video. It's up on the Bob After Dark page. It's up on the Children of the Night page. So you guys get a chance, go watch the video. We had some like legitimate, like jaw-dropping evidence. And, you know, from a skeptical standpoint, some of this stuff is not explainable. Mind-blowing evidence.
Weird,
so if you guys get it, if you guys get a chance, check that video out. That's up now where you can get a chance to watch. It furthered our
Not to interrupt you, Bob, but can you get it on beta or VHS?
No. In fact, I haven't heard the term beta in a very long time. Laserdisc, though, Anthony, if you're up to date on that.
I did shave with my razor. Thank you.
There you go. No, but you guys, of course, been on tons of investigations, and Bob, you probably more so than me, of course, but I mean, your thought process in there, I mean, you went in with an open mind, as always, with these investigations. You were probably pleasantly surprised with the amount of activity in there.
You know, a couple of years ago, when Steve was still a regular co-host back in the day, we did an episode at the old studio when the new studio was going under renovation. Halfway through the episode that we were doing, I looked over at Steve, and his eyes just get all real wide. And I'm like, well, you know, I mouthed to him because we're live. What's wrong? And he just, you know, he played it off. After the show, Steve said, man, you need to go look back through the footage. So we did, right around the timestamp where Steve saw it. And Steve says, I saw a shadow walking down the hall and stop right in front of the studio, like the little office area that we had for the live show. And going, lo and behold, we saw it, and there was a shadow. So since that incident, I've always wanted to go back in there and do something. So we finally had the opportunity, and a lot of weird stuff happened during that investigation. So if you guys get a chance, go and watch that. That was amazing.
And I know a lot of people have, but if you haven't, please do check it out. It's something to see. I mean, even if you don't believe in stuff. And all that stuff, people ask me, well, was some of that stuff put on? None of that was put on. That was all 100% genuine stuff.
You legitimately hear me like jumping up and down and swearing at parts because, not in the video, of course, but like off the camera, we had some, just the evidence that occurred right in front of me and the stuff that I experienced firsthand was absolutely insane. So go watch the video. Yeah. Other than that, anything exciting happened to you?
Oh, you know, just besides the ghosts and stuff, not too much there, Bob. No. But a solid weekend overall in 2020, as solid as it's going to get.
I have to say, gents, if you don't mind, it is the season for it. And as my buddy, my pal, my ever undead friend Panic would say, the veil is at its thinnest.
The veil is at its thinnest.
The veil is at its thinnest. Panic, this is like one of two times a year that you can legitimately say this.
But thin as of, or is it getting thin?
That's a question for Anthony.
Anthony, is it getting thin or is it at its thinnest right now?
No, it's getting thin. It's not at its thinnest right now.
When will it be at its thinnest?
Around Samhain, Halloween, okay. All the way to November 3rd.
All right. Well, pretty soon. It's getting thin, though.
It's getting thin.
It's definitely getting thin.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Would you like my weekend update?
What's the weekend update, Bob?
I had surgery.
What kind of surgery?
I had a wisdom tooth removed
that
has slowly developed into a dry socket, and I'm in agonizing pain. But
right now you are?
I am in pain, but I'm here, and we're still doing the show, and we're not going to dive too much into details, folks, but right now we just want to say our hearts, our thoughts, our prayers, our energy, all of our good intentions is going out to our our host of our sister podcast, Ghostly Podcast. Pat's going through a real rough time right now. Not my story to share, but if you guys have a moment, whatever deity you so choose to pray in or lack there of deity, we really need you guys to put some positive energy out for Pat and for Rebecca too. She's helping kind of pick up the pace a lot over there, folks. So if you guys get a chance, please, they really could use our help right now. So make sure you guys are thinking about Pat and Rebecca from Ghostly Podcast. They really could use us. So just, I think Pat's actually listening right now. Pat, just know from the bottom of my heart and the entire Bob After Dark cast, we love you, we respect you, and we wish you the best wishes and the fastest recovery possible for you, pal. We love you, man.
Of course. Absolutely. And we all feel the same love way as well.
Love and light your way, mate.
Yes. All right. If this is your first time ever listening or watching Bob After Dark, the show is about legends, lore, and supernatural. Anything that goes bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird lore, or sand in Anthony's case, this is the show where you hear about it. We talk a little bit about anything that goes bump in the night, and we have weird spooky lore, we have weird creepy news stories of the week, and then we have stories that we get to be shared with all of you guys as well. So we're very excited to have you guys here for another week of Bob After Dark. Before we begin, there is two quick updates I wanted to share with you guys real fast. This upcoming Saturday, that would be the 24th, which I keep saying the 25th, but it's not the 25th by any means. I'm going to be doing a live thing, just kind of found out, at the city of Whiting. We're going to be doing, myself and Pete Grice, we're going to be doing the Hauntings of Northwest Indiana. We're going to be starting live at 5 p.m., and we're going to be doing four sets throughout the night. We're talking about the Rothhaus. We're talking about the Fowler County Jail. We're talking about the old Crown Point Jail, and we're going to be talking about Diana of the Dunes. So that starts Saturday at 5 p.m. There might be some surprise guests making an appearance. Cough, cough to Anthony, hint, hint to Panic, and maybe even hint, hint, hint to Steve making an appearance as well. So if you guys get a chance, that's going to be downtown Whiting at the Sheridan Plaza. I believe you have to RSVP per the event, because it is outside, so socially distant, folks, you have to wear a mask. You have to wear a mask. It's outside, and we're limiting the amount of people that could be at the event. So, folks, make sure you find out about that. We just got all the details finalized about that late last night. So this is kind of, I know we talked about a little bit about it last week, but we have all the details set in stone, so that's going to be this upcoming Saturday. Also, we are going to be announcing a winner of a contest.
Oh.
So throughout the end of September through last weekend, we had the Bob After Dark Presents the Deck the Hollows Halloween Decoration Contest. We rounded up as many people as we could that wanted to take pictures and video of their Halloween displays. And the winner gets a free Bob After Dark loot, which we're very excited to be sending that out. The winner was actually picked not by me, Count Anthony, or Steve, but by Pat and Rebecca from Ghostly. Now, in a perfect world, we were going to have Pat and Rebecca be able to announce that live tonight, but unfortunately, due to circumstances beyond anybody's control, I'll be the one making the announcement. And by the way, Pat and Rebecca, just wanted to say, everybody, you guys did an amazing job. Not one person's display was, you know, everybody's display was wonderful, but there had only be one winner, and the winner that Pat and Rebecca have chosen is Marcy Karen.
Ooh, okay.
Marcy's display was jaw-dropping. She's on like a registry for her haunted house setup every year, and I saw the entrance. That's why I didn't want to pick one, because I knew I couldn't, because I loved everybody's ideas so much. But Pat and Rebecca, that's their choice, was that. So Marcy, if you're listening right now, or if you know, we'll reach out to you via the Facebook page. You are officially the winner of the Deck the Hollows contest. So congratulations to Marcy.
There you go.
Absolutely, we're happy. And before
can
we,
I,
yes,
can
Anthony.
Involved?
Absolutely.
In the winner, congratulations. What kind of contents are in the package? Oh. There? Is there any sort of pastries or anything involved? Or
no, Bob's can't eat pastries right now. Well, I'm sorry, but pastry jokes are off the question. I'm on a soft food diet, man.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Pastries are soft.
No, I can't have them, unfortunately. So, no pastry jokes for you tonight, Anthony. I'm deflected.
Dunk your donut and it's soft.
Also, real quick, folks, we have a 5-star review.
Do we?
We do.
Okay.
All right. So this is the part of the episode where Count Panic cheers the 5-star review we get on the show.
All right.
And before we dive into the news of the week, I just want to say thank you to this 5-star review just labeled Dr. Stans.
Dr. Stans.
As in Ghostbusters.
Okay.
Not. I don't think it was Dan Aykroyd, but it just says Bob's storytelling is top notch. Every week is something new and sometimes, lost them. I'm looking at my phone. Keeps me on my toes. Must listen. 5 stars. So to you, Dr. Stans, thank you so much. A toast from Count Panic to you.
There you go, Dr. Stans. Thank you very much.
Folks, if you wanted to get yourself a cheers live on the show from Count Panic himself, make sure you jump over to the Apple Podcast website and leave a 5-star review. That's very important. 5 stars, not 1, not 2, not 3, not 4. A 5-star review, you get a cheers from Count Panic. We'll read all the reviews live, but only the 5 stars get cheered. So make sure you guys leave a nice 5-star review.
We won't share any stars below that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so let's dive right into the spooky news of the week. This is where you guys, the fans, submit stories to me, and I get to share them live on the show. And as per tradition, I don't think Anthony's prepared for this part.
Uh-oh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Little faith. Not only do I have 1 story for you.
Uh-huh.
I've got 1.5.
You got 1.5 stories. Oh.
I do.
All right. Well, let me start off, Anthony, because this story was submitted not by one fan, but probably 27 fans have submitted this to me over the weekend.
I know where this is going already.
My phone has been blowing up all weekend during my recovery about this story. Yep. And I'm trying to check validity of things while I'm like knocked out and, you know, dealing with like surgery recovery because the story's insane. Folks, a USPS employee reports a 7-foot-tall red-eyed creature at O'Hare Airport. Mm. A.K.A. a potential Mothman sighting in Chicago once again.
Yeah.
Anthony, was this your story?
No.
Okay, good. So I'm reading this word from the Singular 14 here. Manuel Nervet of the UFO Clearinghouse recently received the following report from a woman who said she's seen a 7-foot-tall red-eyed creature after leaving work at the United States Postal Service sorting facility in Chicago O'Hare International Airport around 11 p.m. on Thursday, September 24th. Keep in mind, this story just broke. They've had a chance to interview the person, and the story is now being published. A sighting didn't happen over the weekend, but the story is just getting reported on. This is a direct quote from Manuel's interview with the employee. I just left work at the USPS sorting facility at O'Hare Airport around 11 p.m. on Thursday, the 24th of September, and was walking out to my car when I saw something standing at the far end of the parking lot where I usually park. At first, I thought it was a very tall person with a long coat. As I got closer to my car, I unlocked it, which caused my headlights to come on. My headlights hit the person standing about 20 to 25 feet away from the car, causing it to turn and look directly at me. I saw that this was not the same person, but some sort of red-eyed creature, and what appeared from the coat were actually wings, which spread out as it turned and looked at me. At first, I thought this was some kind of very, very large bird, but I've never seen any bird that stood almost 7 feet tall. I'm 5'4", and this thing looked taller than me by at least 2 feet. This thing then started making some weird chirping sound at me, almost like a half chirp, half click, like someone was clicking their tongue, but very much faster. It then made some type of screeching sound and took off running towards me. It got within 10 feet and took off into the air and flew above me. I was screaming hysterically as I crouched down behind car doors and I dived into the car head first. I was in a near panic as I tried to start the car, close and lock the doors, and turn on my interior lights. I started my car and took off down the parking lot and flew down the road till I hit the main road. I got home and told my husband, who also works at the same facility, and he was the one who told me about the sightings of this thing. I was scared, fill in the blank, and hope I never have to see this thing again. This thing is roaming around the area, scaring people half to death. I hope the airport people decide to do something about this, about it someday. And the witness is a 17-year veteran of the USPS, who's worked at that facility for 15 years. This isn't the first sighting of this at O'Hare Airport in that general vicinity, and it just blows my mind that we have another sighting. I have checked in with my sources, who's very... I'm not going to reveal who my sources are, but I have checked in with my sources, and they're checking the validity of the story as we speak. But this is making like national headline news because fans not only here in Chicago are reaching out to me, but I have fans from like the like East and West Coast reaching out to me too, being like, another Mothman sighting. Hashtag panics take.
Well, I too saw the story and I was going to send it to you, but I figure everybody else would send it to you as it is. And it sounds like that was the case. People sent it your way.
No, it's good. When you see a story like this, folks, say something. Yeah. See something, say something.
But they know your history with Mothman, so of course they're going to send it. But here's the thing. It's a very popular destination for Mothman, it sounds like. How many times has Mothman appeared by the airport there?
A lot.
So what attracts Mothman to...
We don't know.
The air. Of course, they're still looking into it. But why the airport?
We hope nothing bad. You have to understand the concept of a Mothman sighting typically isn't a very good one. They have it has a certain presence about it that's supposed to be a harbinger of like possible death or bad situations. But the fact that we have a legit concrete sighting of this thing once again, and this might be the first one I could think of in 2020, and the fact that it's still hanging around O'Hare Airport really blows my mind. Anthony, what's your take on the Mothman sighting again?
Like you said, you know, definitely seeing Mothman is not in, you know, historical reference, it's not the best of things, but it doesn't surprise me with what's going on in the world and all the energies that are happening right now, be it, you know, tragedy with deaths and so forth, that they're, you know, no pun intended for the count, where... You know, the veil is at its thinnest. I think, in some respect, in the metaphysical sense, that we are breaking barriers of different dimensional things, and things are coming in and out, and we're just feeding on the energy.
Yeah. So
what happens next? Do we?
We don't know. Okay. What happens next is I'm about to make a huge announcement on the show.
You are?
Yes.
About Mothman?
About Mothman.
Okay.
The long-awaited Mothman episode of Bob After Dark is coming very soon. All right. It just so happens to be our 50th. All right, 50th
anniversary. For that.
What's that?
Haven't we waited a while for that one?
It's the long-awaited episode. The Mothman episode is coming. And our 50th podcast episode's coming up in a couple weeks. I wonder if the two correlate.
So,
stay tuned.
Wait a second. So was this all a publicity stunt for the Bob After Dark?
Okay, let me put an end to some rumors, because this has been coming up on... I was just interviewed on a podcast the other day. I was interviewed on a podcast last week, and these are fans not from this area. But according to Pat from Ghostly... Pat started a rumor that's kind of making its rounds across the podcast world, is that I am the Mothman.
You are the Mothman.
I am going to squash these rumors right here, right now on Bob After Dark. I am not the Mothman.
That's what they all say. Isn't that what they would say, Anthony?
We can stop calling you Mothman?
No, I'm not the Mothman. I am
not. Are you
sure? I'm positive I'm not the Mothman.
Now, Art brings up a great question here.
Find the light in his face. See what he does.
I'll have to do that. Art brings up a great question here, though, Bob. Is there more than one Mothman out there, or do we just not know?
We don't know. Okay. The thing is, typically the sightings of Mothman hang out right around, you know, the major sighting was in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. And over time, we've slowly been getting more sightings the more it moves out closer to Chicago. So is there more than one? I don't know. Is it possible that this thing's traveling interdimensionally? It started in West Virginia and now it's here. It's very possible. If you talk to our friend Dr. Ben Vanderson of the Cook County, talking about like the Cook County's Forest Preserve, there's a lot of strange and weird that hang out in those areas, like the Robinson Woods and places like that. So it's very possible that the Mothman might be here living out in those woods and no one would ever know, because it's kind of dangerous to be out there. So that's just, that's just the way it is on that one.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Anthony, I want to hear your story.
This one's up Panic's way.
Really?
I know you want to hear that.
Panic. Sure.
Good old Loch Ness Monster.
Ah, Nessie, of
Nessie,
course.
That's Panic's favorite.
Haven't heard about her in a
Nessie
while.
She's been caught on sonar 500 feet below the surface of water. It is described as the most compelling evidence of the existence of our good old friend Nessie. Huh. An object estimated to be around 33 foot long was captured by cruise Loch Ness director Ronald McKenzie. He was on a tour boat last Wednesday with about 12 passengers, and they stopped because they had spotted a sea eagle, but something else had caught the captain's radar. Underneath, something about 558 feet deep was spotted. The leading sonar expert looked at the footage and described it as 100% genuine. Now, there are things of like sturgeon and fish that enter the lock from time to time. But a Nessie expert that's been studying the lock and Nessie for years, Steve Felton, states, and he quotes, "It is the most compelling evidence of the existence of the Count's good old friend."
Wow, how about that?
Wow.
So, you know, it's been a while since we heard. Is it my take?
Yeah, hashtag Panic's okay. Take, yes. People get mad if I don't ask
you. Well,
you
got
to
bring it up, though. But no, it's been a while since we heard about Nessie, and I'm glad there's some more stories circulating of her, because it's one of those things. You know, Sasquatch, Bigfoot, they get a lot of attention. Mothman seems to be getting a lot of attention these days. But Nessie, I mean, it's been a while since we heard a good Nessie story. So, Anthony, thank you for bringing that up there.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. This next story comes to us from Pat from Ghostly Podcast. He sends this one in. A huge cat found etched into a desert among the Nazca lines in Peru. That's NAZCA lines in Peru. Mm-hmm. This is a feline geoglyph from 200 to 100 BC, emerges during work at an Usco World Heritage Site. The dune sands of southern Peru etched centuries ago with geoglyphs of a hummingbird, a monkey, an orca, and a figure that some would dearly love to believe is an astronaut, has now been revealed to be the form of an enormous cat lounging across the desert hillside.
Oh.
The feline, the Nazca line, dated to be between 200 BC and 100 BC, emerged during work to improve access to one of the hills that provides a natural vantage point from which many of the designs can be seen. A UNESCO World Heritage Site in 1994, the Nazca lines, which are made up of hundreds of geometric and zoomorphic images, were created by removing rocks and earth to reveal contrasting materials below. They lie 250 miles south of the Lima and cover about 175 square miles of Peru coastal plain. The figure was scarcely visible and was about to disappear because of where it's situated on such a steep slope that's prone to the effects of natural erosion, Peru's cultural ministry said in a statement this week. Over the past week, the geoglyph has been cleared, conserved, and shows a feline figure in profile with its head facing front. It was said that the cat is about 37 meters long, with well-defined lines that varied in width between 30 centimeters and 40 centimeters. That is one big cat, and not the Yule Cat, wrong part of the country.
I'm going to bring that up.
But hashtag panics take.
Well, that's a shame it's not in tribute to the Yule Cat. So this was just discovered recently?
Yeah, well, it was there before.
Okay.
So they were slowly kind of trying to bring about, because it's you know, on a really steep slope.
Yeah.
So it's very possible that the more they worked on this hill, the more they may destroy this thing.
Okay.
So at first they thought it was a monkey. They thought it was, you know, a snake of some sort. At first, then they thought it was an astronaut, which case that would have been insane because people are making, you know, images of, you know, astronauts 100 BC. But after they uncovered everything and after they made sure everything was all set and safe, turned out to be a cat.
A cat. Well, you know, it's funny because I think in Egyptian times, right? People, it was all about the cats, right? People went before the cats and praised the cats, and they were like worshiping these cats. So if this thing is however many years old you said it was, it makes sense. I mean, nobody's doing tributes for other animals out there. So it looks like we're worshiping a cat once again. Although it would have been a nice touch for it to be the Yule Cat, but that's beside the point. Maybe next time they'll discover that. So. But interesting, Bob. Very interesting story there. Thanks, Pat.
Yes, thanks, Pat. We appreciate that. Anthony, what's your take on that?
Very interesting. Very, very interesting. Have you ever seen any of these glyphs? There's one down south from here near Starved Rock. I think it's the park that's across from Starved Rock. Buffalo Park. There's actually a live buffalo there. And they've got these hills that from and please quote me anyone if I'm getting this incorrect, that you can actually see different, you know, animals and really? You know, sacred animals that the natives and the indigenous people represented. I think it's cool. It's
really have to go cool. on a tour of those
but,
things.
It's not the cool. It's not the Yule Cat.
No,
but it's cool.
It's not the Yule Cat, but we'll soldier on, right?
Absolutely, we'll not the Yule Cat. That's definitely an interesting story. Yeah. Anthony, you got one more story before us before we move into viewer submission mail?
I do. Actually, this one here is a story that, should I say, is down my neck of the woods. Yowie.
Oh, no.
Yes. A Yowie, the Australian Bigfoot. Hunters claim they've seen a huge poo on a termite mound and it's proof that this mythical beastie exists in the bush. A bushwalker, which is somebody that goes out bush, is like going into the woods or the things like that, as we say in Australia, was in the far north of Queensland. And he claims and was in a frenzy after discovering a pile of poo on a termite mound. This is for him to believe that this is the supernatural Australian beast. He claims the poo looked nothing like a pig, a roo, or an emu. But there was also tree limbs, which is, you know, synonymous for Bigfoot sightings, that were perched on trees in like weird shapes. He also said he felt very uneasy, like he was being watched. So in good old Australian style, what did he do? Still feeling uneasy, he ran to the local pub.
Just as you do.
Down a couple of drums to calm down, where the local bartender proceeded to tell him that, yes, in fact, around that area, there is a ton of Yowie sightings. And the poo that you did see was, in fact, a Yowie.
Wow.
Leave it to Anthony to come on and bring the show's disgusting level up a couple of notches. Hashtag panic stake.
Well, you know what? He's got footage of this, I guess.
What? No, we're good. We're good. Anthony, no. We're fine. Hashtag panic stake.
All right. I'll put the camera on me now, I guess. No, well, here's the thing. You figure if someone's out there, the size of the matter at hand, the poo here that we're talking about here, You know, sometimes it's just not humanly possible, or, you know, you look at all these animals out here that might
do that.
It's not possible for them to have it that large.
You know,
For
what it's worth, in cryptozoology, people actually use this type of evidence all the time to try to, you know, help prove things. It is a part of science, folks. You know, we're not trying to be toilet humor here, but you get the idea. Yeah. All right.
Look, if you look at these things, right, we've got Mothman sightings. We've got Nessie sightings, right? And now we've got Yowie poop. The veil is at its thinnest.
Fair enough. Now, folks, if you guys didn't know, tonight we're celebrating our 2-year anniversary of the show, and we're going to do a little monologue about it later. But, you know, for the past couple months here on the show, we've been taking stories, viewer submission stories, from fans. And, you know, the fans have been writing in about UFO sightings, no cryptid sightings. We haven't had a cryptid sighting yet, but we've had, you know, ghost stories and stuff. This week, I wanted to bring on somebody that's actually shared the desk with me at one point a couple of years ago when we did the Busting in the New Year episode. This was long time ago, pre-podcast days. And he's a big, dedicated fan to the show. He's in the chat every week helping out and, you know, picking fun at me when I mispronounce something behind the scenes, because it happens from time to time. And I reached out to him because he has a really fascinating story that I wanted him to share, but I wanted him to kind of have his own little spotlight for a moment. James is on the phone from Peoria. You guys might recognize him as, well, James from Peoria. James is a dear friend of mine, one of my best friends, a brother, and a big fan of the show. You're on the line, James.
Oh, hey there, everybody.
Oh, hey, James.
Hey, James from Peoria. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, mate?
Good, mate. Good. Nice to hear from you.
Nice to hear from you, too. Good to see you back.
Thank you.
Now, James,
yes,
we want to hear your story, because your story is one of the most fascinating EVP stories I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the more fascinating ones, because, you know, I've studied the paranormal a long time, and I've never heard of one quite like this, in all honesty.
James, for the fans at home that might not know what an EVP is, can you just give a quick idea of what it is?
Sure. An EVP, or electronic voice phenomena, is when you have a recorder going and you ask questions and things like that, and you get sometimes answers or odd noises or disconnected sort of words that show up on the recording later that you have to amplify that you didn't hear at the time of doing the recording.
Okay.
We were at a cemetery that's kind of local to me here, where I live now. It's a little further of a trip, but it's out in a tiny little wide spot in the road called Bishop, Illinois. It's
the sticks.
Oh, it is very the sticks. I know you say I live in the sticks, but I got to take you out there sometime, and you'll say, "Wow, James, now this is the stick." But there's a tiny little cemetery there with about 150 people there, buried there, called Zion. And I heard about Zion when I was in high school as being really haunted. And, you hear that thing, you're automatically skeptical. Oh, it can't be that. Can't be that bad. Can't be that haunted. One of the best EVPs we got out there was actually, like I said, I've never heard of anything like this before. There is a tombstone out there that's about a 10-foot tall stone, sort of an obelisk. And the very first time we had gone out there, it had a 2-foot tall stone urn on top of it, one of the signs of mourning.
Okay.
Now, the stone is over 100, heck, it was 100 years old when we first went there. And, weathering and everything, the urn had fallen off the stone. My grandmother was by that stone with her recorder. It was a fall afternoon, sunny day out, nice calm weather, I mean, just perfect weather. And the reason we know she was by that stone is in the recording, you hear her read the name on the headstone. She says, John Henry Bishop, and she pauses, and when we were playing this back, an EVP appears, and I heard it, didn't quite understand it, so I had to amplify it, and it says, and it sounds like a male kind of whispering, I'm John Henry.
Ooh.
And I thought, well, that was interesting, and I just kind of continued along, and you hear her read another part of the epitaph on the stone, Catherine, his wife, and I heard something again. I was, what the heck? So I amplified that section, and it was the same voice from just a few seconds before, and it whispers, can you fix my urn? And I just find that fascinating that, I mean, not only is he by his own stone, by his own admission, 100 years on, he cares about the condition of it.
That, you know, James has told me that story several times, folks, and I really wanted him to share it live with you, because no matter how many times I've heard that story, it always gives me chills, and it always makes, like I'm hearing it now, and I have straight goosebumps from it. James, by the way, folks, if you guys don't know, James is a paranormal investigator, and kind of leans almost towards the skeptical side. You're a skeptical believer, right? Is that what you would call yourself?
Yeah, and whenever I've gone on an investigation, I like to go in with the attitude of, it could be haunted, but I'm not going to just, oh yeah, and automatically, I want it to prove to me that it's haunted.
And this is one of those stories where you just kind of scratch your head and say, all right.
Yeah, that one really got to me. We have had so many strange experiences in that cemetery that it can't be explained because it's very, very isolated. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's surrounded by woods. There's no utilities nearby. There's no houses nearby. There's nothing. So it very quickly eliminates, well, it could be this, it could be this, it could be this. Well, what else could it be after all that's been eliminated?
Absolutely. Anthony, what's your take on that story?
That's really cool. I mean, to capture something like that is pretty amazing. Especially with EVPs. And if for the folks that, you know, have never heard of an EVP or have never done an EVP session, it's very, very hard to decipher an EVP at times because there's a lot of static noise and things that you have to kind of pick up. But to actually have a noise come through with words is pretty cool. So, yeah, I want to go check that out, James.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime.
Are we taking a field trip down to the sticks?
We are taking the Bob After Dark Mobile is coming out of the shed.
We're going to the sticks, everybody.
I would love to do a live Bob After Dark out there if we can get a good enough.
I was going to say, are we even going to get service out there? Yeah.
It's spotty at best.
You know, I crack jokes. I know James personally, and I've been out in James's neck of the woods, and let me tell you, compared to where I live, I crack jokes that James is in the sticks, but the fact that James is saying that this place is in the sticks just makes me think that this is in the middle of nowhere.
It is, and the town of Bishop is maybe like 5 or 6 houses kind of spread out in the woods. It's crazy.
That's an eerie thought. James, I just wanted to thank you for being a listener the 2 years that we've been around, and you always have good comments. I always see you chiming into the chat, and it always makes me smile, and I really appreciate having you around these past 2 years. So thank you so much, and thank you for coming aboard and telling your story.
Oh, yeah, I'll have to kind of stitch together some pictures of the stone and the EVP in a video, and I'll share that in the Children of the Night group.
If you have that EVP, James, because I've never heard it, even when I, you know, even when we talk and stuff, I've never heard it. If you have a copy of that EVP, I would love to hear it.
I thought I sent it to you, but maybe I haven't. But I, like I said, I'll share that in the Children of the Night group and let people kind of listen and get their opinion, because there is like a cicada noise in the background, but It's a really distinct, clear voice.
Just for the viewers at home, because I don't know if you answered this, but did you fix that headstone?
Yes, actually, we did. We had some, and there's some more story to it. The vehicle, the truck we were going to use to tow a man lift out there broke down. And one time my grandmother was out there, we were trying to get the truck fixed, and it was being really, really real troublesome. And she went out there, and she went to John Henry Stone and said, well, the truck we have broke down, and it can't pull the machine out here. We need to fix your stone. And it doesn't sound like John Henry's voice. It sounds almost like a woman's voice. An EVP shows up that says, oh, no.
It's like, you know, you got to think this is the final resting place of these folks. And in their case, they probably, you know, unfortunately, probably been long forgotten. So the fact that you even put the effort in to go and fix it, James, that means a lot for me as a cemetery goer and a historian in that regard. So thanks for doing that. And again, James, thank you for being a part of the Bob After Dark family for the 2 years we've been on.
Oh, yeah, and congratulations on 2 years. I hope there's many more.
That's the plan, as long as I'm here.
Okay, well, don't die from tooth rot.
Not yet. Thank you, James, for calling in. Everybody, that was James from Peoria. Everybody, make sure you give him a hand in the chat there. And, folks, if you have a paranormal story that you would like to share with us or a weird, creepy news article that you wanted us to talk about, reach out. You can email me at bob@bobafterdark.com. You could send the Facebook page a message. That's facebook.com/bobafterdark. Or you could slide into the DMs on Instagram @bobafterdark. We'd love to hear your stories. If you have photos, this is a cryptid sighting, which that's what I'm waiting for. If anybody has a cryptid sighting story or a ghost sighting, alien, whatever it might be, we want to hear it. So, folks, you can do that, and you're welcome to remain anonymous as well. I have no problem not sharing your name if you do not want to share it, but I still want to hear your story, and no matter how crazy or how bewilderment it could be, we still want to hear it. We have another caller.
We do. Somebody that's been around for 2 years, minus maybe one show.
Is this John?
Yeah, John.
John, before you say a word, thank you for being the most active caller in the Bob After Dark verse. Believe it or not, you have your own sub fan group amongst the children of the night. Everybody knows when John's calling. So thank you so much for being a part of the Bob After Dark family for these 2 years.
Well, you're quite welcome, Bob. And I thank you for that. Those comments. I really appreciate that. And as I always said, I enjoy your show and always looking forward to Tuesday nights to tune into Bob After Dark.
What's on your mind tonight, John?
Yeah, hey, how you doing there, Anthony? Welcome back. Nice to see you.
Oh, hi, John. How are you? Nice to hear from you.
Yeah, oi to you too.
John, you're always in my heart for a number of reasons. Number one, you're a gentleman. Number two, you played me that Australian polka song.
Well, hey, I miss the days where we could, you know, be outside again, as we did a couple of years ago in Hammond. But hopefully, good Lord willing, we'll be back to that sooner than later.
Absolutely. So, what's on your mind tonight, John?
Yeah, you know what? I might have asked you this question in the past, Bob, but when you have when you go on investigations such as you did at this old studio there. Mm-hmm. And I've watched it, and you come across some, you know, active paranormal activity there. And with all the equipment that you have, and I think James just alluded to one of those equipments where you pick up the sound. So it looked like it appeared that you did come into communication with a spirit, which we kind of,
yeah,
I'm going to say who it is, but we worked there at one time.
Absolutely.
So, does this spirit or any other spirits that you come in contact with, do they have any sense of emotion, such as, like, you know, what are you doing in my house, or did you, you know, why did you enter my house?
Absolutely.
Or is it happy or sad or
angry? So there are two. there's two types of hauntings, John. You have an intelligent haunting, which is kind of what you're alluding at with the idea that a spirit can know that you're around, or in James's case, when he communicated with that spirit in the graveyard that night, that's definitely an idea of an intelligent haunting. They know they're kicking around, and there's no, you know, how do I describe it? There's no doubt. They know that they're a spirit, and they know they're interacting with somebody. Sometimes that could be malicious. Sometimes that could be a very positive thing. Now, on the other side of the coin is what we call a residual haunting. A residual haunting is every morning at 3 o'clock in the morning, I hear footsteps go across my floorboard above me. It stops at a door, and that's it. And it happens every time. That's what is what we call a residual haunting. And there's no, that spirit is stuck in a time loop, is what I like to call it, right? So that spirit is just, it knows what it did at 3 o'clock in the morning, and that's that. It's kind of harder to interact with a residual haunting. I think Anthony could back me up on that versus an intelligent one. An intelligent haunting, you can make them talk to you all day, and heck, most of the time you can't get them to shut up. That's how I'm going to be when the time comes for me to haunt this earth. You're not going to get me to shut up. But in a residual haunting case, they don't know. So, but in the case of who I dealt with, I believe at least at the studio last week, the old studio, he was nothing but kind to me. And there was never a moment of being like, oh, I'm scared. No, that was a very calm and peaceful experience. And that's, I have nothing bad to say about that. Now, Anthony, you would agree with what I said, yes?
100%. And just going on, like with a residual haunting, John, basically it's, imagine that you in life, you know, love to get up at 6 a.m. and make your cup of coffee, go to your door, grab your paper and sit on your table. It's almost like you're leaving an imprint of your own energy because you've been doing that for years and years and years. So a residual haunting is just almost like watching a movie of somebody's life that's just going over and over and over. But yeah, Bob nailed it 100%. That's pretty much the significant difference between both of them.
I hope that answered your question, John.
Yeah, sounds real good. I appreciate that as always. And nice to, again, hear from you, Anthony. And Bob, we'll keep the airways going on Tuesday nights.
So. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, John. And thanks for being a part of our lives for 2 years on the show.
No problem. Have a good one.
You too. We have another caller.
We do. We have Pat on the line. Pat.
Oh,
Ghostly.
My God. Pat. Hi.
Hey, guys.
Pat.
I just wanted to
bring a tear to my eye.
I just wanted to wish you guys a happy 2-year anniversary.
Thank you so much, man.
Yeah, it means a lot to me. I've been a huge fan of you guys for almost the whole 2 years, I think. You know, it's crazy, and you guys are just a couple of weeks older than Ghostly, so.
Basically twins.
That you are a sister show, hands down.
There you go. No, I think more you're our sister show.
We're
the Skeptic Bros, man.
Yeah. Pat, paranormal podcasters have to stick together.
Yeah, and everyone is right. You are Mothman.
I'm not. Pat, I am not.
I have legitimate proof.
Pat, I'm not joking with you when I've been interviewed on two podcasts over the past 2 weeks. And both interviews I had were like, hey, Bob, you know, there's a rumor going around the pod world that you're the Mothman. No, I'm not the Mothman. I promise you I'm not.
In due time, I will release my proof, and everyone will see that you are Mothman.
Pat, I'm not going to share what's going on, but I don't know if you heard at the beginning of the show. Just know for the entire Bob After Dark family is pulling for you, man, and we love you more than you'll ever know, and we care about you and whatever it takes, bud.
Thank you. And Anthony, I just wanted to say welcome back to Bob After Dark. You know, it's good to see your face again on the show.
Thank you, Pat. That means a lot to me. And I wish you all the love and light and all the best, okay? You are very loved by not only Bob After Dark team, but by a whole lot of people. So many blessings.
Thank you so much.
Okay?
Thank you, guys. And you guys have a great evening, and I can't wait for your Mothman episode.
Absolutely. We're looking forward to having it, Pat.
All right, man.
Thank you.
Bye.
Oh, that was nice. Yeah. Now, folks, we're going to take just a quick break here for our live fans. Just stick around for a moment. And for our podcast fans, stick around because you're going to be hearing words from a podcast that you should be listening to. See you in a moment.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez.
And we're back. Welcome back, guys.
Welcome back. Good to be back,
Panic. Good to be back. Panic, what'd you do during break?
You know, I was out there at the airport trying to find Mothman, basically, and no sightings in the break there. But the search will continue on here, Bob. The search will continue on.
Anthony, what'd you do during break?
I had a slice of pizza.
Oh, was it good?
Fantastic.
That's good. You guys want to know what I did?
What'd you do?
I planted a cactus.
Did you?
Yeah.
In the studio?
Yeah.
Where?
It's somewhere.
Okay, I'll look for it later.
You'll find it when you step on it.
Oh, no.
Can I say something, Bob?
What's that?
When I saw you the other day,
yes,
you had this smell, and I could not put my finger on what it was.
Anthony.
It was almost like mothballs.
Mothballs?
No, I'm not. There's no mothballs. Oh. I don't have a problem with moths, and I'm not the Mothman.
I never see you and the Mothman in the same room, though.
There was a sighting of Mothman above a convention that I was speaking at the same evening.
There you go. It's like Batman Bruce Wayne.
There's a fact that there's proof right there in the pudding that I'm not Mothman.
You know what? I think you need to reveal your true identity. Take your glasses off, man. You need to reveal your true identity.
There's my glasses. They're off. I'm still Bob.
That's Bob.
Bob. I'm not Mothman. No wings.
There he is.
You know, Art in the chat says Bob isn't tall enough to be Mothman. There it goes. Mothman is said to be 7 feet. I am 6'2".
Close.
6'2½ going on 6'3". But I'm not 7 foot tall. So there you go. Not Mothman. Thank you. Thank you, Art, for chiming in on that one. So I'm not Mothman.
Okay. Case closed.
Case closed. Rumor squashed. No more. Now, folks, keep in mind our phone lines are open, 219-845-1100. You guys are welcome to call in at any point here while we're still live. I'm sure Jack will be calling in. It's almost 10 o'clock now, and we're just getting to the lore. So Jack will be calling probably at like 11:30. We're getting there. Jack's waiting to strike. Okay. Now, over the past few weeks on Bob After Dark, we've had a themed month based on classic monster movies and the classic movie monsters that are based in lore. So we talked a little bit about vampires the first week. Last week, we kind of talked about Creature from the Black Lagoon and swamp creatures. This week, because Anthony's back visiting us for the episode, and Anthony's not going to reveal enough about Anthony, but Anthony is pretty well versed in the world of voodoo. I wanted to talk a little bit about my favorite movie monster, and that is the zombie. But before we do, we have a caller who's on the line.
Yeah, we got a fan of the show since 2 years now, Andy, on the line here.
Andy, you're on the air.
Hi there.
How's it going, Andy?
Okay. Want to wish you a happy anniversary.
Thank you so much.
And I don't know if you remember the picture I posted of the UFOs I caught.
Yes.
I got an update on that.
Ooh, let's hear it.
Well, remember, I don't know if you remember, I said I took 3 pictures, but only one came out.
Yes.
Okay. Well, the next day, I tried using the same camera to take some pictures, and the whole SD card was corrupt, except for that one picture.
That's bizarre, Andy.
I know that happens with UFOs sometimes. You know,
it definitely is. It doesn't want you taking its picture.
Yeah. you know, I don't remember taking that exact picture either.
Hmm.
But I had to take them pretty quick. Huh. It was raining out and it was cold. And but it was strange. Only one picture came out, and then the next day I found the whole SD card corrupted except for that one picture. I had to go out and get a new SD card for the camera.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that update with us, Andy.
Now, do you think that's alien related, Bob?
I don't
like,
know.
They knew that the pictures were being taken and they corrupt the car?
It's possible.
Could be.
Could be. That's a good point. Thanks for sharing that, Andy. What I actually am good friends with, his name's Brent. He runs the Hysteria 51 podcast. That guy's like deeply rooted into the world of like alien stuff. I am not an expert in that stuff. I like to talk about it. I like to dabble. What I'll do is I'm going to pass this info and your photo off to my friend Brent. And we're going to see if he can give me some 2 cents on that, because I'm really interested in that. That because I have no idea. But thank you so much for calling in and sharing.
Okay, happy anniversary again, Bob.
Thank you, Andy. Appreciate
and Cody
it.
And Anthony.
Thanks, Andy.
Bye-bye for now.
Take care. How about that, though? Corrupted card, Bob.
I don't have an explanation for that. Like I said, I'm going to reach out to somebody that's a little bit more versed into that than I am and see his take on it.
Right.
Now, before we begin, I just I have something I want to say to both of you.
Oh.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Oh, I see what you did.
It's a reference to the story, I think.
The zombie film genre is my absolute favorite genre of horror films. Hands down.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating concept to me that there is this thing that could rise up and make a body come back to life, and it just, goes on this spree, and then you're trying to fight to survive, and I've seen a good chunk of these zombie movies out there that are the more popular ones. I've seen a lot of bad ones that aren't so popular. Flight of the Living Dead, anybody? I digress. It's just a fascinating topic, and we're going to talk a little bit about why I like it a little later. But did you know that the idea of the zombie predates Romero's Night of the Living Dead leaps and bounds,
really?
Probably centuries.
Really?
Before.
Okay.
And that's where I'm going to pass it over to Anthony to talk a little bit about where does the zombie come from?
You ready?
Yes.
Dim your light. Okay. The undead, the living dead, the walking dead, rotting corpses rising from the grave with an appetite for human flesh that is never satisfied, constantly looking for the tasty brain to feast upon. These are what our modern interpretation and image of the zombie is, thanks to Hollywood's interpretation of such creatures. But when we're talking about zombies, we really need to dive into the history and culture and the spirituality, most importantly, of the Haitian religion of Udon. Not voodoo, as practiced primarily in the South, like Louisiana and the Mississippi Delta regions. Both voodoo and Udon sometimes get intertwined or mixed up a little bit. We need to go back about 4 centuries ago, where these legends date back to the people of the West African region. As early as 1502, the horrible slave trade had taken women, men, and children from the West African homes, and with the Spanish ships taken to the island known as Española. With both French and Spanish colonization to the islands, the French took ownership of the western portion of the island, which was then known to be San Domingo, and now we know it as Haiti. Many of these enslaved Africans were put to work in the plantations where tobacco, rum, coffee were grown and harvested. With their own religion being suppressed from the fear of death, they came together to form a new one to offset the atrocities that they were subjected to. It was only when these people, along with the indigenous peoples of the islands, banded together to turn over the slavery and then become the Republic of Haiti, many of these people fled to the New World of the Caribbean and the Americas, where still they live with some of their slave owners, but also themselves. In the West African language, the word ensambe means spirit, or sometimes God. In Haiti, the word zombie means designation of the spirit, most particularly the spirit of a person who has been captured by a magician or sorcerer to perform its biting. In Haiti, many rural farmers relied upon the elders of the land, the Hugons and the Mambos, who are the high priests and priestesses, to manage their everyday life. These people not only helped in the political and religious aspects of living, but some grouped them to form a secret society, which also enforced the society's rules. Even to this day, the secret society are feared, for it is the laws that are broken. The members of these such groups would enforce them to what is considered the most corporal punishment of all, the most feared of them becoming zombified. It is believed that there are two aspects or parts of the body attached to the soul. The petit bonange, or good angel, or eternal soul. This is the part of the one that controls our thinking and our emotions and is also able to contact the loa, or the voodoo, or voodoo spirits and deities. And then there's also the grand bonange, which controls motor functions of the body. The fear is that these societies, these magicians and sorcerers, know how to disenlarge the soul from its body. It's a kind of semi-permanent removal that leaves a person barely living, neither dead or alive, just them operating on a plain and simple level of existence. For the Haitian population, this evokes the most fear and horrific idea, as you would be incapable of anything because your soul has been captured. The culture believes that the dying process takes time, meaning that the soul takes days to actually move on to the death. And in those days, both parts of the soul are at risk of being stolen or captured by a bukor, or a spiritual leader who uses their power in a malicious way. They basically put your soul into a bottle and is there who they can control. And if somebody who controls the soul can control your body. So how is somebody made into a zombie, you may ask? There is a secret amongst practitioners, but what is known is that there is a special powder made up of various neurotoxic herbs and poison. One being tetrodotoxin from the good old puffer fish. It is given to the person without their knowledge. This puts the person in a deep coma. Vital signs are very faint and seem non-existent, even fooling doctors, physicians, which they would pronounce the person clinically dead. The person would have a funeral, buried, but would be consciously aware of every detail of their surrounding, but not able to move. After hours or even days of the burial, the body is dug up and given the antidote, which is also another powdered by the administering bukon. The person then regains consciousness, but there will be damage to the neural and memory functions. Sometimes the person doesn't even remember who they are after waking up, leaving them in a zombie-like state. From there, they will be taken into working fields and mines, away from where they were buried, to live out the rest of their days as a zombie. In the mid-80s, an ethnobotanist by the name of Wade Davis went to Haiti for the research as a spread of rumors of an actual zombie returning from the grave and back to his home village. A man called Clervius Narcisse, who had died 20 years earlier, had returned to his village. The basis of this man was that he was a landowner who, without his family's approval, he, along with the 150 other zombies, sold a land that he owned without his family's approval. And to the secret society, this was deemed as inappropriate, and it was punishable by corporal punishment. At this time, it was punished by zombification. As I said, he, along with 150 zombies, managed to escape 20 years later. Wade Davis's research led to the paper and his book titled Passages of Darkness, The Ethnobiology of the Haitian Zombie. The book, as most of us know now, was then made into a movie directed by Wes Craven called The Serpent and the Rainbow.
Such a good flick, by the way.
Yep. The serpent symbolizing the earth and the rainbow, the heaven, and which means everything living exists between both. But then in 1929, a book called The Magic Island was the first book to actually use the term zombie here in the States by a fellow called William Seabrook. To Seabrook, who was a military man traveling to Haiti and describing these zombies like people. Then we fast forward a little bit more, and here comes Hollywood in 1932 with the adaptation of a play turned into a movie called White Zombie, played by Bela Lugosi as he played an evil voodoo master enslaving people for his own workings. As this led to the fascination of the zombies and to what the zombie was and represented in Hollywood, representing with blood, guts, gore, but to the people of Haiti and West Africa, the zombie is feared and people are weary of losing the very essence of life and death and becoming zombified. It's a very different take on what we're, you know, as a society are used to with films and things like that.
Absolutely. You know, the concept of a zombie, like Anthony is saying, is more of an occult, mm-hmm. you know, an occult figure
yeah.
versus a monster. But that's where the tradition lies. Now, the idea of a corpse reanimating is nothing, and, you know, presuming things is nothing new. We even hear about it in stories in the Bible. You know, in the Bible, they don't have the modern, you know, carnivorous zombie, but there are plenty of references to bodies being reanimated or resurrected, which may have been inspired zombies myth throughout history. In the book of Ezekiel, they describe a vision where Ezekiel is dropped into a boneyard and prophesizes to the bones. The bones start to shake and become covered with muscle and flesh until they're reanimated, yet there is no breath in them. Even in the book of Isaiah, the book of Isaiah states, "Thy dead man shall live, together with my body they shall rise. Awake and sing, ye that dwell in dust, for the dew is in the dew of herbs, and the earth shall cast out the dead." And, you know, there's plenty of stories, like, you know, talking about Lazarus and such things. So the concept of the dead rising from the grave is nothing new. But the idea that we get it from Hollywood is different. George Romero, probably the godfather, in my opinion, one of the greatest filmmakers of all time, kind of pioneered the concept of this idea of this creature rising from the grave and eating flesh. Also popularized by the concept of a ghoul in you know, more cryptid stories and monster stories along them lines. But the idea is that even Romero isn't quoted being the guy who says brains, right? So one of the most popular ideas for a zombie is the fact that they say brains, brains, brains. That's not even new either. Fun fact, that didn't even come around until much, much later and down the line with a film called Return of the Living Dead. That was made back in 1985. That was the first time we ever saw a zombie craving for the concept of a brain and saying brains. And Romero was stated being that guy, and in fact, he never did. The idea was that Romero created these beings that would return from the grave and would crave flesh. Well, unfortunately, George Romero is no longer with us, but in an interview, people asked George Romero, "Why did you create these creatures that were based on the idea of eating flesh?" And Romero said, "I don't know. Seems scary at the time." But people have theorized the idea that these zombies that Romero created would be the reason that they eat these flesh is because of the serotonin built into the skin that human skin have. So they eat it to release the serotonin that we have built up inside of us. You know, the concept of that is absolutely frightening. And as time goes on, we reinvent the zombie once again. You know, we have Anthony's story of the occult zombie coming from the Voodoo culture, moving into these things that were, you know, craving human flesh and were very slow moving and maybe had some intelligence, to now zombies are these hyper fast moving things that I definitely wouldn't survive if that was the problem.
Yeah, I feel like that's a problem right there, Bob and Anthony, because traditionally, you know, when you think of a zombie, you think of slow moving, just chanting brains. These zombies nowadays are far too advanced. I don't know, if you're undead, guys, wouldn't it take a little time for you to, you know, learn how to walk again, let alone run at hyper speed? I could believe you're slow moving zombie. Well, the fast moving zombies, really, that seems a little too far fetched for my taste there.
You know what it is now? Zombies have definitely moved out of the brains things, and you know there are some vegetarian ones out there too.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, they eat brains.
Grains. Good job. There is a fun little news story I found from The Independent where they were speaking to a physics students at the Leicester University, and they were asking these students and professors, what is the probability of actually surviving a zombie disease outbreak, as we know in films? And they said, as little as 100 days, humans would be outnumbered 1,000,000 to 1. And after 3 months, thing would be looking pretty dire for humanity, with only 300 people left alive. In a hyper breakout situation that we see in the movies. And it would be, you know, after 9 months, it's unlikely that these 300 people would have enough manpower to help not only repopulate the earth, but, you know, basically have a chance to survive. So in the idea of a actual zombie apocalypse, we have no real chance of surviving. Now, I know a lot of people, I have a zombie plan. I know there's a lot of people out there with plans, but the reality is, according to this university, where the situation does not look very good in it, right? I want to talk a little bit about what a zombie disease symptom might look like. So as of right now, we don't know of anything that is causing people to go around eating flesh and causing somebody to turn into a zombie. That idea is both not only fictitious from Hollywood, but it's also very biblical and very occult-like, of this idea that you created this essence, this being that's literally torn of all of its humanity and is stripped down to the basic primal instincts. And the fact that if you get infected with it, you also lose your humanity and, you know, the chain continues. There's nothing like that right now that we know of. There's no diseases. But there are a couple different diseases that have zombie-like symptoms. One of which would probably be the most common idea, and this would be like what we would have as a very much a traditional sense of a zombie, would be as if we had a mass breakout of rabies, sleeping sickness, leprosy, which we don't really have a big problem with these days, but, you know, leprosy is a legitimate thing that was close enough to a zombie outbreak. VCJD, or also known as the Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, the necrotizing fasciitis, and of course we go back to the rabies talk. All of those diseases all have zombie-like symptoms to their symptoms. We have a caller on the line.
We have Jack.
Jack, it is 10:20 at night.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Jack. You're on the air.
How are you guys doing?
Good, Jack. What's on your mind tonight?
Yeah, a couple things. I first want to say, you know, Pat, if you're still listening, you know, we're all thinking about you, Pat, and I want you to remember that you are stronger than what's going on in your life right now, and you're going to pull through this, and, you know, we're all rooting for you. I want to say that, and I want to say hi to Anthony. It's nice to see you back, Anthony.
Thanks, Jack. Nice to hear from you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. I wanted to, about the zombies, you know, I don't know if you guys remember this, but there's an episode of The X-Files where a giant, like, insectoid type creature was hypnotizing people and then killing them, but they came back as a zombie, and there was only one individual that was able to see them. And then eventually Mulder was able to see them as zombies. Do you guys remember that episode?
I do not. Fun fact, I don't think I've ever seen The X-Files.
The truth is out there, Bob.
The truth is out there. I've probably seen 5 episodes of The X-Files my entire life.
Yeah.
I know, blasphemy, I get it. Jack's probably screaming. I know the Queen of the Night's mad somewhere, too. But
yeah, that kind of frustrates me. But, you know, this idea that that some insects have this power of hypnosis, of, we come across this a lot in the paranormal, actually. The idea of, you know, maybe not necessarily zombification, but a zombie-like state. The idea of possession, the idea of taking over, the idea of manipulation. So it's funny because even though, you know, what we think of as zombies is really a Hollywood creation, at least modern-day zombies or the modern idea of it, it really is prevalent, you know, in many aspects of the occult and the paranormal. And also, I think that there was an interview, too, though, of George Romero said that, you know, the idea of zombies was also the idea of consumerism.
Yes.
How we always consume things blindly.
Yep, you got to the bottom of my notes there, so I could scratch that off completely. But you're completely right. The reason why Dawn of the Dead took place in the mall is because it's a big allegory to consumerism.
Yeah,
that's the honest to God truth there. The idea that, you know, us as humans, we go and we shop mindlessly, and, you know, consume. It's an allegory to capitalism, and, you know, we'll skip that part of the stuff, but, you know, just consumerism as a whole. But Jack's absolutely correct. Jack, you still there? Did I lose you?
Yeah, that's my 2 cents. That's all I got.
No, I appreciate it. Jack's got the best 2 cents of them all, by the way. We always appreciate when Jack calls in at, like, right in the middle of the night when I'm falling asleep in my chair. Jack always happens to call and wake me up. Jack, are your news articles being published yet? Or are we expecting those in the next coming weeks?
Yeah, well, I submitted my articles. You know, they said that they'll get back to me, but, you know, it's one of those things. I'll be sending a follow-up to see what's going on with that. But that's kind of normal, you know.
Like, oh, sure.
You know how it is.
So. Absolutely. When those come out, will you keep us updated, please, so we can start directing people to where they can start reading your work, because that book's going to come out maybe in 10 years?
No, it'll come out. Don't worry. It's coming.
Jack, thank you so much for being a part of the Bob After Dark family. And I know you haven't been around for the 2 years, but you've been around for a good chunk of it. And I always appreciate having a good colleague like you in the paranormal world that I could bounce ideas off of and always give me some good 2 cents and always keeping me awake in the middle of the night when I want to end the show.
Absolutely, Bob. Thank you for everything. Panic, thank you. And Anthony, it's great seeing you. And I hope you come back to the show sometime soon.
Always a pleasure, Jack.
Thank you.
All right, that was Jack, everybody, paranormal enthusiast, a paranormal journalist, and a dear friend of mine. I wanted to end my two cents on the zombies, talking about the zombie fungus that takes over ants' bodies to control their minds. This is like a legitimate case of what we would consider a zombie in the real nature, right? So, in Brazil, there is a fungus that belongs to the, and I'm going to butcher the name of this, it's the Ophiocordis unilarius. That's Ophiocordis unilarius. Or we're just going to call it the zombie ant fungus.
Good enough.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You got that, right?
Yeah, we wrote it down.
Absolutely. So what this does, this fungus infects a carpenter's ant, and it grows throughout the insect's body, draining of its nutrients and hijacking its mind. Over the course of a week, it compels the ant to leave the safety of its nest and ascend to a nearby plant stem. It stops the ant at the height of about 25 centimeters, a zone with precisely the right temperature and humidity for the fungus to grow. It forces the ant to permanently lock its mandibles around the leaf. Eventually, it extends a long stalk through the ant's head, growing into a bulbous capsule of spores. And because the ant typically climbs the leaf that overhangs its colony's foraging trails, the fungus spores rain down onto its sister below, zombifying them in turn. And that, my friends, is the definition of why nature is absolutely horrifying. And that is in regard the like legitimate closest thing we get to like Hollywood zombification in the real life world. Horrifying.
It is horrifying.
Anthony, what's your take on that?
Yeah, it is horrifying.
that's just the normal day in Australia for you guys, right?
You take a risk every time you wake up and you open the door.
You know, that's all we have on the zombie story, folks. But as you guys know, tonight marks our 2-year anniversary of being on the air. Not our 2-year anniversary of being a podcast, but 2 years of being on air talking to
a
you
formal
guys.
Show.
It's a formal of the formal show. The show started literally with me and Panic, you know, coming up with an idea to take Bob After Dark, which was a show that I did in like my parents' spare bedroom. And it started off as a Facebook Live show where we talked about like Ghostbusters and nonsense. And half the show was me saying hi to the people that joined. For whatever reason, that was popular and people always listened to it and people always texted me and wanted more. One day I woke up and I had the opportunity to do this here at WJOB, semi-professionally, right? And I knew we had to kind of center focus this concept of a show to something. And there are a couple things in the world I know about nerdy topics and know about movies and stuff, but everybody talks about movies and I didn't want to be a movie critic because it's just, you know, I mean, I can, but it's not what I wanted to do. I also wanted to be a horror host because I knew about horror movies. But again, being a horror host, you know, I don't think that was necessarily for me. I have a lot of colleagues that do it, and maybe I'll do it someday. You know, that's a pipe dream. But I wanted to be something different. I knew the one thing I knew was the paranormal. I knew about ghosts. I knew about cryptids. I knew about a little bit about aliens and demonology and the occult. I knew about that stuff. And I grew up listening to things like Coast to Coast and watching, you know, Scariest Places on Earth. And what I always like to claim is like my earliest, like really big inspiration of this stuff is the paranormal bits on Unsolved Mysteries. And I got the opportunity to do the show 2 years ago. And I remember our first episode we had, I was sitting in a desk in this very studio, and it was a long wooden desk. And I remember I'm about to tear up here shortly, but we sat there at its desk, and I remember our first episode was about vampires. I remember I got to the studio like an hour and a half before the show. I was so nervous. And I remember telling Panic, I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing.
It was 2 p.m., I think, when you showed up.
It was not 2 p.m., but it was pretty early. It was early. Yeah. And I was so nervous. I didn't know what I was going to do, you know. And I, you know, Queen of the Night showed up to help celebrate kicking it off. And I remember me, her, and Count Panic went out and we had a beer afterwards. The show went really well. We had a decent crowd tuning in and listening in. And, you know, we talked about vampires. And at first, I didn't know what I wanted to do, you know, with the show. I talked about the paranormal. I wanted to do this kind of a thing. And it started off as a hobby. That's what it was. It was a hobby. And, you know, about 3 or 4 episodes in, something clicked in my mind that this is exactly what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. I enjoyed the paranormal aspects. I enjoyed, you know, talking about things that go bump in the night and cryptids and ghosts and demons and all this stuff. I, you know, Steve, back in the day, we had that, you know, little joke feud, but, you know, Steve came on and was co-hosting the show with me, and Steve became, you know, big-time professional wrestling star, so he couldn't be around as much, and then we met Anthony, and just come to find out that Anthony was a Ghostbuster, too, and we had the opportunity to have Anthony, you know, come on and help out with the show every week, and, you know, I've talked Now, since I've kind of decided this is what I want to do with my life, I have spoke in 5 states about Bob After Dark. I've spoken at a dozen or so conventions. This year was supposed to be a big year for the show, but unfortunately, kind of COVID slowed things down. But I'm working on this to become my full-time job. It's going to happen here probably next year. We'll just say next year. Hopefully COVID will slow it down and I could get back on the horse and trying to get the show done and, you know, get the show off the ground and full-time job and stuff. And I've met so many great people doing this, you know, Pat Rebecca from Ghostly and Jack. And I remember my first ever guest, Chris Speedis. And, you know, this adventure I've been on for these 2 years has been absolutely wonderful. And I really owe it all to the guy sitting in the behind the glass there, Count Panic. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have what I have now and the opportunities and, like, you know, lining my feet. I've, you know, had the opportunity this year. I was going to talk at San Diego Comic-Con, like the biggest convention in the world. Unfortunately, it didn't happen due to COVID, but I mean, those were things that were going to happen. So we look forward to that next year and how we're going to build up the show and start making, you know, this career full-time stuff. And, you know, I owe it to Steve and I owe it to Anthony for coming around, people like James from Peoria and people like Ben Vanderson, you know, and my partner, the Queen of the Night, and my parents. Those are the people that help support me all the time, keep me going. And I remember the first person I told about me getting the show, this is pre me even being with my partner, I remember telling the Des Plaines Ghostbusters that I was getting this, and they were laughing. They're like, oh, that's so great, you know. And I remember Ben sitting down with me and helping me flesh out ideas, and it's just been an amazing ride over these past 2 years. So on behalf of myself with the Bob After Dark team and on behalf of WJOB Studios and my entire, you know, just everything, thank you guys so much for giving me 2 good years of Bob After Dark. And it's just starting, guys. You know, the podcast has been going strong for almost a year straight now, thanks to Pat and the Memoriam Development, Nick Margaragas. You know, those guys, they do amazing work. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have the podcast version. And now I'm a podcaster. I'm working on a book, and, you know, there's lots of cool things happening that I can't reveal yet because it's still like building. But, I don't know if Anthony or Panic want to say anything on the regard. I wish I had Steve be able to say something, but Steve's, you know, out in the wrestling world, but I know Steve feels the same way.
Anthony, do you want to go first or?
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, since I've known you for a while, Bob, and you know, we've had many adventures together, and it's definitely been a fun ride. And all to the folks out there that, you know, they see Bob on a, you know, every Tuesday, they see him on the show and things like that. But, you know, in all honesty, you know, he's a real, real sweet man.
Oh.
Who will do anything for anybody, and from the bottom of my heart, I wish him everything that he wishes for. He deserves it. He works his, you know, his rear off for what he wants. And I think he's a good role model to anybody that's, you know, who is curious about things that go bump in the night or the paranormal or supernatural. You know, even Yowie Poo, if somebody's interested. But on the other, you know, really want to say that it's been a pleasure, and you know, here's to the next years and years and years of Bob After Dark, and to Panic as well, and to WJOB for, you know, having us host this goofy paranormal show that we, you know, try to make a little bit of a laugh out of. So
yeah,
cheers to you, man.
Thank you, Anthony.
Yeah, I remember a couple years ago, Bob, you cornered me at Pierogi Fest. You're like, I have this idea. I do it in my basement. I want to bring it to actual studio. And we're like, okay, well, we'll do it down the line here. Then eventually in October, we got around to getting the show off the ground there. And 2 years just flies by like that. I know this year, of course, with the COVID and pandemic, got off the rails a little bit, but not just for us, but everybody out there. So here's a brighter 2021, a bigger 2021, and the show keeps on rolling, Bob. Despite what life throws at it, a pandemic, crisis, Bob After Dark continues.
We never stopped.
It doesn't stop.
Never. Even during the worst when we weren't in the studio, I was doing the show by myself.
Still did
every week. Well, yep. Pat joined in when he could to help me get the show going. But every week, Bob After Dark has continued. I've missed a handful of episodes in my time doing this, but I don't think people understand how much work goes into the show.
No,
I wake up thinking about it. I go to bed thinking about it. This is my life. This is what I want out of my life. This is my career. But I do it for you. I do it not for myself. You know, I do this for you guys, my fans, the Children of Night. Every person I meet at a convention who said, wow, thank you, or, you know, whatever, that's why I do it. And, you know, 2 years flew by, guys. Thank you.
From the people that listen to the podcast, from people that listen on the radio, from people that watch on the video, we can't do it without you guys, right? The listeners and viewers keep us going.
Absolutely. And Anthony, I got a question for you, mate.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of this creature from Mobile, Alabama?
Is that the wee little beastie? You have delivered us for ages.
Ages.
There's one way to destroy this beast. A 1,000-year-old flute.
Passed down from generation
to generation. And the wee little bags of Lucky Charms.
The Alabama leprechaun. And boy, it had an artist rendition. I don't get to share stories behind the scenes.
I do have one more thing to say.
Yeah.
On a serious note. Anybody see a leprechaun?
Yeah! I've got to share this one behind the scenes story before we call it a night here, folks. We're at the Wisconsin Comic Con. We're staying outside of Milwaukee because it was a cheap hotel room for us just to stay at. And we were at the con maybe 10 minutes outside of us doing the panel because it was just dead. The con itself was, we made it to the con, right? It was a good time. Everybody's asleep. Like, we didn't get to bed till like 3 o'clock in the morning. And I woke up and it's me, Panic, the Queen of Night, and Anthony. We're sharing a hotel room for to get back and forth to the Comic Con. And I wake up at like 7. I have one eye open. And here's Anthony stretched out in his bed with his arms like out above his body, just stretching out his fingers. And I look over and what are you doing? And Anthony says, nothing. And I start texting him back and forth pictures of the Mobile, Alabama leprechaun. And we did that for a while.
Yes, we certainly did.
That was a quick behind the scenes, folks. Anthony, Panic, do you guys have any closing words? Anthony, you could go first.
If you're out in the bushlands of North, far North Queensland, be weary of the Yowie Dung.
There you go. You know, my final words, I heard some beeping in the background there, Bob, but I think we're good.
I just got up to go check real quick because I thought it was the smoke alarm, and I'm like, we should probably leave.
Well, there might be a fire happening in the building, but we'll check it out here. But no, once again, it's been a great 2 years. Happy to be here. And you know what? Maybe time to celebrate with some cheese curds after the show, possibly, right?
Once my tooth is better. We'll get some Kringle. We'll get some Kringle. We'll get some cheese curds and some spotted cow.
Curds, Kringle, and cow.
Curds, Kringle, and cow.
How about that?
That's the three of our great state of Wisconsin. Yep. Folks, on behalf of the entire Bob After Dark crew, I just want to say thank you guys so much for listening and watching another episode of Bob After Dark. To my mom and dad, I just want to wish you guys sweet dreams and thank you for supporting me 100% of the way and never stop believing in me. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. And thanks for believing in your silly boy's complete silly idea behind Bob After Dark. Folks, remember the two most important rules are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.